I'm going to call the House Transportation Committee to order, and it is February 23rd, about 6 minutes after 1. And let the record reflect that the following representatives are present: Representative Peterson, Representative Greenberg, Representative Munoz, and myself, Representative Wilson. And I'd like to recognize our staff today. We have Nancy Hemingway in the back wall there, House Recording Secretary. Nicole over in the corner is our LIO monitor, and my chief of staff is Becky. So before we start, please turn your cell phones off. They not to vibrate, but to off, because they do interfere with the telecommunications that go out, so that people that are listening have a harder time. And we do have two new bills on our agenda today, and one previously heard bill. So we will hear House Bill 7, the Robert E. Buss Veterans Memorial Bridge. And don't see Representative Chenault, so Tom Wright, will you come up and present the bill?
Madam Chairman, for the record, my name is Tom Wright. I'm the senior staff for the speaker, and this bill is pretty simple. I hate saying that, because every time you say there's a simple bill, it ends up being ending up in a quagmire somewhere. But and the speaker's intentions were to be here for this committee hearing because he does like to present his own bills, and he is wrapped up in a leadership meeting right now, which is probably taking a little bit longer than expected. And I'm sure he would send his apologies if he were. I'll extend his apologies for him. Madam Chair, the House Bill 7 was introduced at the request of the uncle of Robert Bush. Robert Bush passed away July 12, 2007. He served in the U.S. Army and served in Operation Desert Storm. All this information is found in your sponsor statement. Upon his discharge from the service, he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which eventually claimed his life. His children drive over this bridge daily, and naming the bridge in Robert's honor would remind his family and the public of his contribution and service to his community and to his country. I'll be happy to try to answer any questions in your backup. You do have the fiscal note of 3.7 from the Department of Transportation, and they can explain that also in your backup. There is a petition with numerous signatures of community folks who have supported this idea. And basically that's the bill in a nutshell, Madam Chair. Also, DOT did hand out this paper as to what the design would look like, and we'll pass that around to committee members since Ms. Soroki handed me numerous copies here, I'm sure, for the committee to review.
Okay, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. My question is being answered. I normally wouldn't have a problem with a bill like this. Here we go. But if I don't have a copy of it, I wonder if it's really the Tom Wright Bridge, but it's not.
Tom Wright Memorial Bridge.
Madam Chair, Representative Grunberg, I wouldn't be that presumptuous.
does the department wish to testify in the bill? Okay. Are there any questions from the committee? Is any of the family here or online?
Madam Chair, we emailed Robert's uncle and let him know that this committee hearing was taking place, so I'm not sure if he was online or not. He works at the Slope, so sometimes I'm not sure he gets all his emails on a timely basis.
Okay. No one online? I do have a...
I support the bill. I think it's a good thing, and I'm glad you're bringing it forward. I would just point out on the way that it's lettered, I think the possessive in veterans is not necessary. So just to take a look at that, veterans apostrophe.
Correct.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. I think that, speaking for my friend to the right, left, and myself, I think we would agree with that. And it's unusual to have an amendment without a word in it. But this would qualify. I just wanted to say to Mr. Wright and the family, I am amazed at the number of people who support this. And now they probably all want bridges named after them. But
okay. Well, and I guess I know where Representative Wilson might be going with this. The question has arisen. Robert Bush was not killed in action. I mean, you know, and that happens, but, you know, I guess with the, you know, we decided, you know, we wanted to go with this bill where the committee decided, you know, they wanted to go with it. You know, there is community support for it. Of course, we do receive a few negative comments, you know, from folks every once in a while on this, but, you know, we haven't heard that many negative comments, and, you know, looking at the petition itself, there's more widespread support for this than there is, you know, any negatives at all.
Well, I've got a few questions I'd kind of like to answer, because usually when we have something like this, it's because the person maybe died in action or something right. like that, or how long was he in the service? Do you know?
Madam Chair, I don't know.
8 years?
I thought it was like 18 years.
Oh, 18?
But I mean, I could, maybe I'm reading wrong. It said he, I could be well wrong on that.
He was in Desert Storm.
Right. I don't have a service record, Madam Chair, so okay. I can't
and
answer
then,
that question.
But his illness wasn't associated with the military service.
As far as we know, Madam Chair.
Okay. I guess I kind of leave it up to the committee to kind of decide, because we do have a question here that, you know, lots of times we'll name a bridge off of after someone, but usually not in connection with something unless, you know, we're saying veterans here, and his illness wasn't connected with it, and his death wasn't connected with it. But there were a lot of people that, how big is the town? Does anybody know how big the town is?
Madam Chair, it's not really a town. It's more of a community of, you know, really loose-knit community of, you know, it's not recognized as a, it's not organized as a city. It's more of a, as I said, a community more than anything.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom, did you say there was a fiscal note? Because I didn't find it in my packet.
Oh, yeah. Actually, the fiscal note is $3,700.
And Madam Chair, that's for the cost of installation of signs, you know, on the bridge or new posts and foundations in each direction of travel, according to the fiscal note submitted by DOT.
And you might have it up in front.
I didn't have one.
It was handed out. Oh. So, and let the record show that Representative Johnson has just joined us.
Madam Chair.
Representative Runberg, did you have another?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wrong on the dates of his service because I can't tell. But speaking as a person with type 2 diabetes, I'm not aware of anything in this state that has ever honored the people who have died from diabetes. And that's a very serious illness. Type 1 is different than type 2, but they're both equally deadly. And I'm speaking out of personal concern. I guess I have a personal interest in that. How would the members feel and how would the family feel if we were to simply name it the Robert E. Bush Jr. Memorial Bridge? That would honor not only his service to the country, but he would stand on behalf of all of the folks who suffer from diabetes.
Madam Chair, we wouldn't have an objection to that.
That might be a very nice solution.
I would personally feel very, I would hope we'd do that personally.
Okay. Do you want to kind of be thinking about an amendment?
Yeah, it would just strike the word veterans in line 2, veterans in line 5, veterans in line 7.
2, 5, and 7. Are there any, do you want to move your amendment?
Do you wish to take that now or more testimony first? You want to take it now? I'm happy to move.
Well, there's no other.
Oh, okay. At this time, Madam Chair, I would move amendment number 1 to strike veterans on line 2, strike veterans on line 5, and to strike veterans on line 7.
All right. Hearing no objection, So it passed. Amendment number one passed.
Madam Chair, that takes care of our apostrophe problem.
Yes, sure does. And there was no testimony online or here, so. What is the wishes of the committee? Representative Munoz.
Would you like a motion, Madam Chair?
That would be fine.
Okay, I would like to move, let's see, where is the House Bill 7 amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Hearing no objection, so moved.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you. And we have paperwork to do as it comes along. And we will move on to the second bill on our agenda. And are the people here for that bill? Okay. It's House Bill 345, the Sams Schuyler Memorial Bridge. And that is a bill of Representative Ramirez. And Margaret Dowling, are you going to be coming forward?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead and introduce yourself and then tell us about the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Dowling. I'm staff to Representative Ramirez. And I just have a few very brief words. We have members from DOT here to testify today and describe the bill more completely. But I did want to let you know that when DOT approached Representative Ramirez with the idea for this bill, he was very pleased to sponsor the bill and to have his office carry it. Sam Schuyler is a well-loved DOT employee. He worked many years along the Dalton Highway, and as you probably know and can see from photographs in your packet, the Dalton Highway is long, it's desolate, it's beautiful, it's sometimes lonely, and sometimes harsh. Friendships along that road, and workers and travelers, their friendships are forged like steel. And this is an opportunity to name a bridge along the Dalton Highway so that those truckers and friends who pass by can remember him always. We have Meadow Bailey from DOT and several others here who knew Sam, and they'll talk about him and explain why we respectfully request your support of House Bill 345. Your packet includes a map. It shows the location of the bridge where we are proposing that his name be placed, and there's photos and a petition and letters of support. You won't find a fiscal note here. According to DOT, the budget already has funds for signage, and that would be the only cost associated with this bill. So now I'd like to introduce Meadow Bailey. She's the information officer for the Northern Region of Alaska DOT.
Okay. Meadow, are you online? Or you're here?
Yeah.
Oh, you're here. That's right. Okay. That's fine.
For the record, my name is Meadow Bailey, and I'm the Public Information Officer for Northern Region DOT. And I'm here today to speak on behalf of Northern Region DOT maintenance and operations employees who work together with the Alaska Truckers Association to support this bill, which honors an employee who worked on the Dalton Highway for 23 years of his life and then passed away suddenly. And he was a manager along the Dalton Highway. He was really loved by the employees who worked with him. He had a very wide knowledge base. He was one of those people, though, who would also help you out anytime you needed. And as you know, along the Dalton Highway, many of you have had the opportunity to travel that. It's a fairly desolate highway, especially in the winter. And so Sam was one of those employees who would help truckers out at any point if they needed it. So when we started talking about naming this after him, the employees were very excited. You'll note that there's a letter in here and signature from employees of DOT Northern Region, and there's also a petition from the Alaska Truckers Association in support of this.
I have to say, Meadow, I almost didn't recognize you.
Yeah.
Because
the last time you saw me, it was on the Dalton.
Yes,
and we all look different
all
on the Dalton.
Okay, let the record show that Representative Johansson has joined us, and Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In this picture, which one is Sam?
Sam is the gentleman in the orange.
Oh, the one in the orange. Mm-hmm. Oh. This was impressive. It's really kind of a tribute to the whole crew, really.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm touched. And I mentioned that there were little critters running on the bridge, unnamed little critters.
Are you suggesting we name critters? I'm
No, that's what, we had some testimony concerning small critters on the Dalton Highway a while back.
Okay, you know, Representative Peters.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering, for information purposes, what river or body of water does this bridge cross in? Is there not currently a bridge there now? Is this a rebuilding of a bridge, or what's the situation?
Representative Peterson, through the chair. This is actually existence as a culvert right now, and the bridge that will be built as a part of a reconstruction project that we have on the Dalton this summer will put a small bridge. It's about 122 feet long, but 32 feet wide. It's a fairly small bridge, but it's in a section that Sam worked and knew intimately, and so we felt it was an appropriate tribute.
And from what I understand, the culvert has collapsed, and so we need
It's in need of repair, yeah. And it was deemed that it was better to have a bridge that would be a more substantial passage.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Gruenberg?
Yeah. You know, I drove this in the summertime, and there was one place we sort of went down a little bit, and the culvert had collapsed on the right side of the road. Is that this?
I don't know off the top
okay.
of my
head. Sorry. I support them.
Okay. We do have some. I would like to open up a testimony because we do have someone online. Howard Thies or Clark Maline from DOT. Would you like to testify on this bill?
Hey, how are you today? Sorry, we hardly hear you. Yeah, I'm Howard Thies, the MNO-DOT director from Northern Region. And Sam is a great employee of ours, and it's a tribute for his workers that work with him every day, and of course some other people there, that if we could do this, it would be a great tribute to him and the people who drive the road.
Okay, thank you. Was this Howard?
That was Howard. Clark's here as well.
Okay. Any questions for Howard? No questions, Howard. Is Clark, do you want to testify?
Yes, just to take a moment. I'm the Northern Region Maintenance Engineer. I was here at DOT 91 to 95 and then came back again a few years ago, but I worked with Sam back then in the last entry, and just as Meadow had indicated, and the reason both the truckers and our crew have thought this would be a neat idea is that Sam was one of those, you know, big-hearted, neat guys, not invisible. He was the assistant superintendent for a number of years, but he got along with everybody and solved problems, and, you know, it was always cheerful. It was always good to come to work with him. And he really loved the Dalton. And this would be, it'd be a gesture that I think everybody that uses the Dalton and that would think of him often and remember him well.
The Dalton was his baby, huh?
Yes. Yeah, he knew the Dalton, and he was defensive when the truckers complained or whatever, but he would also fix it as best he could when they spoke up.
Okay, thank you very much, and I don't see any questions, so thank you very much for testifying. Is there anyone else online that would like to testify? Anyone else in the room that would like to testify? Okay, then we're going to close testimony. And what are the wishes of the committee?
Madam Chair.
Representative Munoz.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House Bill number 345 with individual recommendations.
Out of committee.
And zero fiscal note. Thank you.
Okay. Hearing no objection, House Bill 345, version A, has been moved out of committee with individual recommendations and no fiscal note. Thank you very much. And that's kind of exciting for DOT, I'm sure. Okay, now our last bill for the day is House Bill 257, an act relating to the prohibiting the use of cellular phones when driving a motor vehicle. So, Representative Dugan, would you like to come forward? And this is the second meeting that we've had for this bill. And I think there were there is an amendment that has been two amendments. Is there any other discussion that would like to take place, or Representative Dugan, would you like to make any comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted I recognize that my friend Representative Johnson hadn't had a shot at me on this bill yet. He was otherwise occupied, so I wanted to give him that opportunity. And otherwise, I'm just here for questions. If there aren't any, I got a committee meeting upstairs I should go to. I have every confidence that the committee will do the right thing on this bill otherwise. So if there aren't any questions, I'm going to leave it to, there's a couple of folks in the room who actually know this bill a lot better than I do, in case any questions come up.
Why don't you have one of them replace you, just in case there's any questions?
Who do we want up here, Cindy? Okay. This is Charles Boyle, who's my aide, who is apparently drawn the seat in the death barrel, Madam Chair. and with that, thank you very much.
Thank you.
First, Jim Dugan, are you sure you want to leave?
I gave you the best shot I could
give. When we left testimony open last week, and so we do have some people that are online. See. This one is online, and this one is. So we'll just go ahead and listen to the testimony. First of all, from Sitka, Mike Lang, are you there?
This is Sitka. We're here.
Okay. Mike. Is Mike there?
Yes, this is Mike from Pacific High School. And okay. I was just inquiring why just cell phones and distracted driving. But, you know, you could be eating food or applying makeup, and it's just as distracting as a cell phone.
Well, that's probably a good question. Is there? Are you asking that question of the sponsor?
Yeah, I just don't see why cell phones are such a big issue. I mean, there's other things out there, especially for a $300 fine.
Well, I will make a comment, first of all, because I do remember last week that when we were talking about things that took our attention away, some things were more attention getting than others, as far as is our attention being diverted for any length of time, and cell phones were more attention getting, I guess. I'm not sure I'm not using the right terminology that they used last week, but it was the fact that that you kind of lost your attention to a greater degree with cell phones than you did with others. So, but I'll ask the sponsors delegate staff if they would like.
I can't hear you when she's talking.
I'm sorry. Did you?
I must say, by living in a small city, our fastest speed limit is around 20 miles an hour, and talking on a cell phone really has no effect, pretty much, on the safety of the driving. I mean, a moose could jump out in front of your car. I mean, you still know it's a moose. I mean, you're talking on your cell phone, and you're not thinking about pizza. You're thinking about the moose and all the road.
Okay, good point. Would you like to, do you feel comfortable responding to his question?
I think you addressed it pretty well, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. Well, I do know that I am also, I'm actually from a smaller community than Sitka, and I have at times been on my cell phone, and I looked up, and there wasn't a car coming, thank heaven, but if there would have been, I might have been in trouble. So, but thank you very much, Mike. Does anybody have any questions for Mike?
I have a comment.
Representative Johansson.
Thanks. I think Mike has a great point, and I support what he's trying to say. I think lots of things can distract people.
And there's no doubt about that. I've not tried to put makeup on in a car, let me tell you that. But, I mean, people eat while they're driving, and I've never tried to read a paper or a book while I'm driving, but I've heard people do that. So there are lots of different things that will cause that. There's no doubt about it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
I would ask that Ms. Cashin come forward, because she has provided a study from Virginia that I think may indicate the severity of the problem. of the cell phone. Certainly, I would say editorially, while she's coming up, if she would, that there are lots of other kinds of... I don't know if you...
Ms. Cashin, thank you for coming up. And would you kind of go into your study then and explain why I did it, but probably not in a very precise manner, so...
For the record, my name is Cindy Cashin, and I'm the administrator for the Alaska Highway Safety Office. Representative Wilson, you did a fine job explaining that distraction is a large part of our growing problem with crashes, not just across the country, but also in Alaska. And when I say crashes, I also mean those that result in injuries and fatalities. The data is missing. We're working on collecting the data, but the data we do have shows that the numbers are growing. Now I want to talk about the 100-car naturalistic driving study that NHTSA put out. And I have the entire study here. I have the 20-odd page summary with me, and I also have the one-page fact sheet. But it's in almost 200-page study that breaks down the various definitions of distraction and the various types of distraction, including handheld and hands-free devices. Putting lipstick on, eating food, reaching for a CD, anything that takes your eye away from the road for up to 3 seconds. Those were looked at over a period of a year with 100 cars. And there were certain types of cars that are listed in the study, certain types of drivers. And so what they came out with was a pretty good level of the different types of distractions. And the number one most dangerous distraction, the one that caused the most crashes, was using a cell phone. And they broke it down to, they being NHTSA, the federal government, broke it down to hands held and hands free, and it really didn't make that much of a difference. And there's speculation, NHTSA has speculated as to why there wasn't much of a difference in using a hands held or hands free. And what they observed, and this is just an observation in the study, was that there's two different types of distraction related activity that occurs or that results when you use a cell phone. When you're using a handheld cell phone, you have to punch the numbers in, and so your eyes leave the road. The hands held conversation, the ones with handheld devices, those conversations tend to last quicker. They don't last as long because perhaps, and this is NHTSA speculating, the driver recognizes that the eyes are having to keep, they have to keep leaving the road. Now with hands-free devices, those the driver's eyes can remain on the road, but those conversations last longer. And so you still have a distraction because the basic type of distraction we're talking about is one that involves cognitive thinking. It's the brain saying, okay, you need to put your foot on the brake. You need to turn here. You need to turn your signal light on. And when you're having a conversation with someone who is not in the car with you, the brain is unable to make those demands on the body. And so the brain is focused on the conversation and not on the driving. Which is why you will see people not use their turn signal or speed up and slow down. You'll see people come to a stop at a green light and they're holding a phone up or they're talking with a hands-free device.
Okay. Does that help any, Mike?
Well, it does a little bit. I mean, it's still up, like, the responsibility is still to the driver for the safety of him and their passengers and the other people on the road.
Okay.
What I see is banning cell phones is just taking away a little freedom that should be to the driver.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. We appreciate your testimony. And Representative Gruenberg has a question.
This is really something I've done a fair amount of thinking about in the last week. And I would ask the members and the folks in the audience to try for an hour while you're driving. Driving with one hand and not be able to use the other hand for anything. Try parallel parking with one hand. Try all kinds of things with one hand. And that is what happens when you have a handheld. your other hand is out of operation. And if you have a cell phone, then it's attached to your dashboard or something, you could dial for a moment with one hand. If you have a handheld, I don't know how you can steer, how I can steer. Let me put it this way. I have trouble steering and dialing. And I think that is something that is a real difference between handheld and hands-free, and maybe that will help answer somebody's question.
Okay, thank you. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just listening to the list of things that you mentioned that people were doing when they were talking on the cell phone. I've actually seen people do all those things and they weren't talking on the cell phone. So I just think sometimes people are not such good drivers, and you just can't always blame it on whether they have a cell phone or not. Just thought I'd throw that in there.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Cindy, can you tell me what number two was for distractions?
Not through the chair, Representative Johnson. I'd need to look at my study. It was one that was equally obvious, but I need to look at it.
So I guess you're not going to be able to answer what number three was either.
No, but I can provide that information to you by the end of the meeting.
Well, I'm wondering if we shouldn't amend it to take the top five most distractive things out, and just if we're going to start socially engineering behavior, maybe we ought to just go 1 through 5 or 1 through 10.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the study provides the level of risk, and so perhaps that is something that the committee would want to look at of each type of distraction.
I'll wait. We'll have committee discussion.
Okay. Representative T. Wilson.
Thank you. Through the chair, when there's an accident and they're in the ditch and they happen to be on a cell phone, okay, how do you attest that it's a cell phone versus the next person who's in a ditch a couple feet in front of them with no cell phone? Because that's what I'm trying to figure out in my mind when they say it's a cell phone problem. Is it only because the cell phone was somewhere in the car? I'm just trying to figure out how you distinguish when there's an accident, how is the cell phone is just not distracted driving?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, you mean how do we collect this data?
Yes.
excuse me. It is through police and traffic crash reports, and it's two ways. Either the driver admits to driving while using a cell phone, or they confiscate the device and look at the phone records. And usually that would be done only if there were a fatality or a serious injury. So I cannot speak for the troopers or local law enforcement, but that's my understanding through conversations with them.
Follow up, Rep. Wilson.
Follow up. So I say I was on the cell phone, but that just because I may have been on the cell phone may not. I mean, we're asking somebody to determine an accident that wasn't there to see the accident. I guess that's where I have problems with the data, is that just because somebody says they were on the cell phone or you look that they were on the cell phone, it really may not have had anything to do with the accident.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, in the cases where the device is confiscated and the records are looked at, they can determine if the cell phone was being used at the time of the crash. With the person being involved in a crash that admits it, I would need to talk with a trooper or enforcement officer to find out, but it's my understanding through conversations with them that they look at the device to see if it has recently been used, and you know, we all know how we can do that.
Maybe I'm not asking the question correctly, because I'm trying to figure out the correlation. I'm not defending that they were not on the phone.
Well, see, on the phone, they can find out what time they were on the phone, so that would tell them if they were on the phone when the crash happened.
Correct, but it doesn't tell you that the accident happened because they were on the phone. That's what I'm trying to distinguish. But that was good. That that helped clarify it for everybody.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, you are correct. And so when you look at a traffic crash form, there are many areas to check off. And so in the area where there's cell phone usage, the officer can check up to two or three boxes, and there's 26 to choose from, and they range from inattention, to cell phone usage, to slippery road. I mean, there's weather, there's driver, there's all kinds of factors, many factors involved. And so the law enforcement officer observes, takes interviews everyone involved in the crash, and then checks off the list, all of the boxes.
And I tell you what, we do have Lieutenant Rodney Dial.
Good.
Online. And
thank you.
Have you been able to hear the testimony and the questions, Lieutenant?
Yes, Madam Chair. And for the record, my name is Rodney Dial. I'm a lieutenant with the Alaska State Troopers. And yes, essentially, if we go to a traffic accident, we try to determine the primary causes of that accident. If we check a cell phone, that a cell phone was involved, that is not necessarily what caused the accident, just that it might have been involved. For example, if we had a driver talking on a cell phone traveling on an icy road, the road condition is most likely the primary cause. Cell phone usage could be secondary. So the statistics really only just show those cases where we were able to show that a cell phone in some manner contributed to the accident, not that it was necessarily the primary cause.
Thank you. And Rep. Wilson has a follow-up question.
Madam Chair, so in the boxes that we were referring to that you can check, and I was on an icy road and I was on the phone, which I do not get on my phone when the roads are icy. Would both those boxes be checked, the telephone one and the icy roads, and maybe a third one if that's what they thought?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that is correct.
Thank you.
I have one question. Is there a box for primary problem and maybe secondary or something like that, so that you know which one is the number one and which one is the number two?
Madam Chair, yes, usually there is. However, a lot of times there are multiple secondary causes, and sometimes it's hard to determine the primary cause as well. So we just, in those cases, we generally have to use our best judgment on that.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Munoz.
Oh, thank you. For Cindy, thank you. Cindy, at the last meeting, you said that other states that have implemented restrictions on cell phone use have continued to allow hands-free devices. Is that, could you restate that for the record, please?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, yes, that is correct. There's 8 states, one of them being Washington, D.C., that currently have a ban on handheld devices, but there is no state that has one that involves or that bans both handheld and hands-free. There are a few states that currently have bills similar to this one making their way or stalled in their legislatures.
Okay. And
I follow up.
Okay, follow up, because we're still in public testimony.
Okay. Well, I'll wait.
Okay. Thank you. We're going to return to public testimony quick. Joseph Stocker.
Joseph,
I got a question.
Okay, Joseph, state your name and your affiliation, and then you're from Sitka also, right?
Yeah, I'm Joseph Stocker. I'm from Pacific High School.
All right.
And what would you consider an emergency? It says in the bill that you can use your cell phone if you get in an emergency. What do you consider an emergency?
Okay.
What kind of situation do you have to be in order for it to be legal to use your cell phone in your car?
Okay, do you want to answer that, or who can answer that for him?
Through the chair, sir, emergency is actually, I guess, Lieutenant or Sergeant Dial should answer that.
Okay.
It's up to the troopers.
Okay. Mr. Dial, are you still online?
Yes, Madam Chair. I suppose we would classify an emergency as something that's necessary to protect property over somebody's life. So if somebody needed to call 911 or to inform something of a nature that was likely to protect property or
you know, protect somebody's safety, we would probably consider that an emergency.
Okay, or if, you know, I'm thinking it's an emergency to the person if their car just went in a ditch and nobody's hurt, but you have to call a wrecker or something like that. That would be an emergency to me to be able to call somebody. So Representative Johnson.
Lieutenant Dow, good to talk to you again. If I'm a teenager on my way home, and I'm using my cell phone, and you get pulled over, and the excuse is my dad's going to kill me if I don't talk to him, would that constitute an emergency to you? Because it certainly would to that child and that father.
That's what I mean.
Johnson, through the chair, I would not consider that an emergency. Somebody called 911 with the same thing, we would say that that's not an appropriate use of the 911 system, so we would probably not consider that an emergency.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To answer that question, it wouldn't be in my house unless the dog was barking in the background. but seriously, that would be an objective determination. It's not whether it is to that particular individual. It's whether a reasonable person would have considered it an emergency. But I'd like to just maybe answer a couple of the questions. I've been looking here.
And Joseph, I just want to remind you that Representative Grunberg is answering your question, but he's an attorney, so he's going to give you some official answers that maybe the rest of us hadn't thought of, maybe.
Madam Chair, I'm just a father. So.
thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Cashin has given us a number of things in here, and I kind of wanted to put on the record what we have. We have her email dated February 18 at 2:49 p.m., and it is a lengthy study of the Virginia study. And if the members would look at pages 7 and following, there are several graphs that list, and I hope I'm not taking words out of your mouth, the types of...
Is this answering Joseph's question?
Or somebody's question. I'm not sure who. It may not be Joseph's. It may be somebody else, if I may.
Now, let's just wait a little bit then and get our testimony, and then I'll go back to you, and then we can use that as part of our discussion.
Sure.
So thank you, Joseph, very much, and hang in there and listen, because we do have some other people that are going to be testifying, and then we will you'll be able to hear as we have our discussion up here in the committee. So let's go to Joan Priestley in Anchorage.
I had another question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Joe, you had another question?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Since we're banning cell phone usage while driving, why don't we just get rid of them completely? Because just about everybody, you know, we spend most of our lives, or, you know, a good portion of our lives driving.
We would
have this object that we are free to use, it's made for our convenience, but we can't use it in our car, which takes up most of our, you know, a good portion of our lives, because we spend a lot of our times driving. If you think about it, you know, you go to the store, you're hungry, you drive to the store, you need to get gas. Everybody worries about getting gas. You drive everywhere.
Joseph, I do have an answer for that, because believe it or not, as you get older, you don't spend most of your life in your car. And when we make laws, we have to look at what is best overall and of all the ages of everybody that's driving. And so we have to take several things into consideration. And I realize, since you're still in high school, that this is the most important thing on your mind. And we want to take that into consideration, too. But believe it or not, the majority of people do not spend any more time in their cars than they have to. Do you have any other questions, Joseph?
No, that's all.
Okay, thank you. I am sorry, Joan Priestley? Or is it John Priestley?
Am I turned on? Hello?
Hello, Joan?
Yes, are you here?
Yes, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Yes, very, very good. Well, thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. My name is Joan Priestley. I'm a medical doctor, and I'm the medical director for the Health Renewal Institute, which is a private nonprofit foundation here in Alaska. The Institute has also studied this issue extensively, and I would like to take the opportunity today to bring four things to your attention. The most important result that we have found from a review of the literature is that this legislation will not have the intended effect that you hope it would have on safety. I know there's been a lot of discussion on personal opinions, often emotional, and there have been a number of studies of simulated driving and looking at prospective potential risk, but for the first time, released it just in the end of January, there has been an exhaustive, objective, and analytical review performed by the Insurance Institute of Highway Safety. It took these people over 9 months to compile the data, and these are their results. Between 1995 and 2008, the number of cell phone users has increased by 500%. And between 2000 and 2008, the number of drivers using their cell phone while driving has increased 250%. And it's estimated that at any given time, 10% of drivers are now talking on the cell phone. However, reviewing vehicle insurance claims for the same time period, 1995 to 2008, nationally, they have found that the incidence of insurance claims for car accidents has remained the same. There has been no concomitant increase in insurance claims. They next looked at fatal and non-fatal accidents between 1995 and 2008 and found that there has been a gradual decline of 8% in all accidents reported over that time period. And the report compiled by the Alaska Department of Transportation from 2002 to 2007 would seem to bear this out. There are over 425,000 driver's licenses issued in Alaska and thousands upon thousands of automobile accidents reported annually. And yet between 2002 and 2007, only 59 accidents yearly involved cell phone usage. And actually that's, over the last few years, that has decreased by 25% here in Alaska. This organization next looked at the four states, New York, California, Connecticut, and Washington, D.C., that have instituted bans on handheld cell phones. And they reviewed all of the claims that were submitted in those states for the 2 years before the ban went into effect and 2 years after the ban went into effect. And they found that, again, the number of claims was level. There was no decline in the insurance claims submitted in those states. They weren't content with that. They then went on and compared those four states to four other states that were comparable in population without cell phone bans. I believe they looked at Arizona, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and one other one. And the two graphs for all those states are identical, even in monthly variations. There is no decline of cell phone insurance, of insurance claims that have been submitted when comparing the four states that have enacted cell phone bans to four states that have not enacted such bans. And the Institute concluded that, and I quote from their president, "The key finding is that crashes aren't going down where handheld phone use has been banned. This finding doesn't demonstrate any safety payoff from all the new laws that ban phone use and texting while driving." So that's my first point. Number two is, I think that this legislation, based on our research, will actually cause crashes that would never have occurred otherwise. Because here in Alaska, people in many professions, they have to be instantly accessible, or we run the risk of losing clients, losing patients, losing business. And that means four rings. So we would have to swerve lanes, somehow bring the car to a stop, find an area, quote, off the road, just to answer our phones. And this would include all health care providers, certainly real estate people who are on the road a great deal, and many other professions that come to mind. Number three is that this bill will cause citizens to suffer needless expense. First, in the way of fines, you're basically criminalizing innocent actions, even where there's no damage involved. Now, there is, of course, subtle revenue enhancement for the state involved in this. We understand that it's politically unpalatable to raise taxes, but there's a back door of increasing fines for innocent actions that does enhance the revenue stream. Insurance industry is keen on passing this kind of legislation, and what we might call big insurance has been a driving force, sometimes subtle, in every jurisdiction where cell phone usage has been banned. I think that they were believed that such laws would decrease accident rates, so the insurance companies would have fewer payouts. And more importantly, at least in other jurisdictions, a ticket for cell phone use results in points on one's license. And insurance companies have seized on the opportunity to jack that person's insurance rates sky high if indeed that person could still obtain insurance. So I think that this legislation actually could drive people of lesser economic means into making a choice between paying their rent or continuing their car insurance. And we know which one is going to fall by the wayside. The last point I would like to make, and I would like to stress as the medical director of the Health Renewal Institute, it's not our policy to comment on the political aspect of legislation, but we want to make an exception in this case. Because the way it's written without amendments, Bill 257, it goes far towards eviscerating or gutting our Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable searches. It will allow police to stop vehicles devoid of probable cause, and the fallback cover position will be, oh, gee, I thought you were using your cell phone. In that regard, this bill should be subtitled, and I think this is a strong statement, but I really urge you to consider it seriously. This bill should be subtitled the Police State Acceleration and Enhancement Act. If you insist on passing laws that restrict citizens' activity and freedoms, and as I believe Representative Johnson has pointed out, is social engineering and micromanagement, I would direct your attention to the several studies conducted by the American Automobile Association Foundation for Traffic Safety. And summarizing the results of several studies, they looked at the causes of distractions that resulted in automobile accidents and near misses even. And they found that by far the most common distraction was looking at an outside event, right? Turning one's head to watch a moose, for instance. That caused 30% of all crashes that were caused by distractions. Adjusting the radio or the CD caused 11% of car accidents. Disciplining children or talking to passengers caused 11% of car accidents. Another study which placed a camera in people's cars and followed them for 1 year found that eating food increased the odds by 57%. Grooming, and they said applying lipstick, so you'd think, well, this is a ladies' thing, but men comb their hair also. Personal grooming increased the risk of a crash by 300%. Reading increased the risk of a crash by 300%. And using cell phones either caused an accident due to distractions in a whopping 1.5% of the time. Or in the camera in the car study, they found that using cell phones was associated with an increased risk of 3.5%. So the other representative was correct that if you want to do something that has this sort of feel-good micromanagement based on actual evidence, it should be criminalized to turn one's head to look at a moose, adjust the radio, talk to another passenger, eat food, or read, or engage in personal grooming. So, in summary, and thank you for letting me continue through my four points here. I think
Our position is that this bill is done, D-O-N-E. It is dangerous, onerous, needless, and expensive. And it has unintended collateral consequences that are can be very serious. We would encourage you to just let it suffer a quiet and dignified death, and instead turn your attention to other, much more valuable and needed legislation. Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you today.
Joan, I have a question. This is the chairman. And can you just tell me what the Health Renewal Institute is? I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, we're a new organization. We were formed to study issues like this, especially as related to, our main focus has been the use of holistic medicine, promoting people's health and freedom from disease and longevity. But we're branching out into doing analyses and comments on issues like this that impact people's health as well. There's social health, physical health, economic health.
Excuse me.
And this bill will definitely impact social health and economic health.
Okay, thank you. And we do have some questions. Representative Peterson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if, according to this, the way this bill is written now, it would be a primary offense, which means a police officer could stop you just for talking on a cell phone. Do you think we have enough law enforcement personnel to enforce a law like this?
Who are you asking that question to? Mr. Dial, or
who was the lady?
Joan. Joan, do you? I guess he's asking you that question.
Are there sufficient law enforcement personnel to spend their time issuing citations for people who are using cell phones? No, clearly not at the trooper level, not at the APD level, the Anchorage Police Department. There are too many real crimes that require multiple officers to stop and or investigate, to divert their attention to people who are engaging in an action that, before it was made illegal, was perfectly fine and that is causing no damage.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And this, Joan, appreciate your testimony. Can you provide us those studies that you cited?
There's also an excellent summary from which I took some of my graphs and statistics. The president of the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, who is also, I think, the director of a subdivision of that institute, which is named the Highway Loss Data Institute, she testified at a Society of Automotive Engineers government meeting in Washington, D.C. on January 29th of this year, and her slides are large, readable, and excellent, and they really present a very good statistical analysis that bans on driver cell phones do not result in road safety and safer driving.
And Ms. Priestley, I appreciate that, but I understand it's great testimony, but I'd like to see some the data. Is there any way you can direct us to where we can go look at that or send it to us?
Summarizing my statements along with several of these studies included. Thank you for the opportunity to do that for you.
So if you would just, if you can email it to my office, then I'll make sure that everyone on the committee gets it.
I'll try. I'm sort of a hard copy kind of gal. I
that's fine.
Really believe in creating written records. I'd be happy to send each of you a written copy of all this.
You don't have to. Just send us one copy, and then I'll get it to the rest of them.
All right. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it Dr. Priestley?
Yes, it is, actually.
Are you a medical doctor?
Yes, I am.
I see. And the chair asked about the Health Renewal Institute, and then you mentioned the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, the Institute for Highway Data Safety. Are these organizations, who are they? Are they interrelated? Are they industry? sponsored organizations. What are these groups that you're talking about here?
The Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, in my understanding, has been around for decades. It's an independent organization. It is supported by the insurance industry, who really enthusiastically wants cell phone bans enacted for the two reasons that I cited. And so for an insurance industry-sponsored organization to publish serious data that really pretty much refutes the idea that cell phone bans have any constructive effect on safety is quite extraordinary, I think. The Highway Loss Data Institute is a subdivision within the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, and I believe it's the Highway Loss Data Institute that did this tedious work of sifting through thousands and thousands of insurance claims and compiled the statistics on claims and cell phone usage and driver usage over the last, from 1995 through 2008.
If I may follow up, please.
Follow up, Representative Groomberg.
The Health Renewal Institute, who supports that? How long have you been in existence? Has that been in existence?
We founded it just this year, and we take no industry support.
Okay. I don't have any other questions at this time.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? I don't see any, so we do have someone else that's online. Michelle Rice from Fairbanks.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And Michaela Rice.
Oh, Michaela.
Yes, it's fine. Well, I'd like to say that this bill, at the moment, I think it could cause more problems than leaving it not made. It would affect businesses. We have the truckers, and we have also so many businesses which operate through a vehicle. All the mailing services in Alaska, without the cell phone use, it would take their business away. Another thing is, right now the bill does not have anything in it about hands-free devices. How can you tell the difference between somebody who is talking on a hands-free device and somebody who's singing to the radio? There are devices that you can wear on your ear, which could be covered by hair. There are also, in vehicles, programs where your phone will be answered by the car and put on speakerphone. So how could a police officer tell that as a primary offense when it looks just like singing to the radio? I think if it is passed, it should be a secondary offense because of that. Also, it was mentioned that the cognitive activity and the recognition, because of the cell phone, you can't see who you're talking to. It's a distraction. What about somebody who is in the back seat of a car and it is dark outside? You can't see that person's face and you're talking to them. Also, if you're in a group, you may not recognize exactly who you're talking to. And we have a lot of darkness up here. Also, other states where this law has been passed with a hands-free exception, how can we compare ourselves to those states? They have more road systems, more cars, they could have more radio stations, they have more distractions than, say, the Parks Highway. They have the busier roads, and also conditions such as New York, where they are getting dumped with snow, have somewhat similar conditions to Alaska. So how can we compare ourselves to other states when there are differences such as that? So how can we compare ourselves basically to national statistics in that case? I think that this bill should have an amendment in it, if it is to pass, for hands-free, so that people could continue with their businesses, and also it would take out that that the detectability issue on how you can tell if somebody has a hands-free device or not. That would make this hard to be a primary offense. Thank you
very much, Michaela. And I don't see any questions. So is there anyone else that's online that would like to testify?
Madam Chair, this is Lieutenant Dial. If I could just add one thing for the committee.
Sure.
Emergency is defined under Section 422150, and it does state, emergency means a situation in which property or human life is in jeopardy and the prompt summoning of aid is essential. And that's all I had. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify?
May I inquire?
Representative Grunberg.
I have two questions.
For the testifiers?
One for Lieutenant Dial and one for Dr. Priestley.
Okay, Lieutenant Dial, since he was the last one that spoke, why don't you ask him the first question, Representative Grunberg?
Okay. Would you support an amendment to the bill defining emergency as it is defined in AS 44.20.150?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, yes, we would.
Thank you. Number two, may I ask Dr. Priestley a question?
Yes, thank you. And Dr. Priestley, Representative Grunberg has a question for you.
Dr. Priestley, would you prefer the bill if it had an amendment limiting it to that would limit it to a hands-free? Would that make it more acceptable to you?
Personally, as a libertarian, no. This is social engineering and micromanagement, and I my personal opinion is that is quite egregious.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Max Grunberg again. Please put aside your political preference now. And from the point of view of the scientific data and the public safety aspect, would it...
Well, the scientific data, as revealed by the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, showed that there is no decrease in claims for car crashes, insurance claims submitted for car crashes, in the four states that have all restricted the usage of cell phones to hands-free devices. So I don't think that the science supports your hopeful contention. Although it's small in economic repercussions, the requiring a hands-free device is an unfunded mandate on the citizenry also. It does require us to go out and buy them. But it is small, admittedly, but it's the principle involved. I just don't think that restricting the use of cell phones, even hands-free devices, according to the science presented by the Insurance Institute and the American Automobile Association studies, I just don't think it's going to have your hoped-for results.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative T. Wilson.
Through the chair, I just had a question to the police.
Okay.
Lieutenant, is that right?
Lieutenant Dial.
My question is, if the cell phones are banned, then do you see people going back to radios, or what kind of communication do you think that would be less hazardous? Because all the testimony I have received, and I've received a stack in my office, they're looking for an alternative. Will that make things safer or just different?
Through the chair, that might be a question better posed to highway safety. I don't believe I have the qualifications to answer that.
Maybe through what they do. You usually use radios, and now you use cell phones in police cars. Is that not true?
Through the chair, that is correct. We do.
Okay, and because I did a ride-along before I left town, and the cell phone was used a lot, so would that also ban your officers being able to get in contact with headquarters by not using cell phones, or what would you do instead?
Through the chair, I'm sorry, I must have misunderstood your question initially.
Okay.
If our officers were banned from using cell phones, we would use the radios, and we do primarily use the radios as we travel down the highway anyway. Cell phones are generally secondary and used more for confidential information. In those cases, we generally recommend to our officers, if they're able, they pull over and talk on the cell phone.
Thank you.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry.
Thank you very much. Seeing no more hands.
I have.
Representative Grunberg.
We are trying to This is to Lieutenant Dial. Lieutenant, this is Max Grunberg again. We're trying to find that statute you referenced, and maybe I wrote it down wrong that defines emergency. I want to get a copy of it distributed to all the people around in the room here. What is the site? I have 44.20.150. That's obviously incorrect. What is the statute number, sir? Oh, I see. 4221. Lieutenant, that's not good. Lieutenant, what is that statute number?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I have here on my Alaska Criminal and Traffic Law Manual, the 2009-2010 edition. I have that as it says, section 4221.50 under definitions.
4220.150.
21.
Correct.
Okay. 4220. I see. Okay. Let me see if I can find that.
Okay.
At least.
Thank you. I'm going to close testimony.
Yeah.
I'm going to close public testimony. And now we will have debate among the committee.
Could we copy this? This is right. Thank you.
Representative Mignot.
Should I move for purposes of amendment? Or what? Would you like the bill moved for amendment at this
bill
point?
Is before us.
Oh, it's already before us. Okay. Yeah. I'd like to offer an amendment.
Okay.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Okay. Do you want to move it, amendment number one?
I would like to move amendment number one, and this pertains to inclusion of an exception for hands-free devices. And I believe you all have a copy of the amendment.
Hearing no objection.
You have an objection.
He already objected.
And if he doesn't, I will.
Yeah.
And I could speak to that objection if Representative Peterson doesn't want to.
Representative Peterson, did you want to speak to
Go
that?
Ahead.
Okay, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just don't think you can dress this pig up. I think that this is bad policy. I do believe it's an infringement on personal rights. We heard testimony that data is missing, but we're gathering. It's speculation. You go through this list of things of that was provided to us, and it doesn't. There's nothing in there that is quantitative. The only data that we've had even slightly quantitative with any effect is the number of accidents with a 300 or 250% increase in cell phones. We haven't had any increased accidents. If they were such a huge problem, there would be a correlation between the accidents and the cell phones. That hasn't happened, and I think, once again, I just don't think you can dress this pig up.
Representative T. Wilson.
I just want to add to that, no other states have done this. I mean, there's very few states that have even done it on cell phones. My question still that I haven't had answered is, how many tour guides and buses and trucks and everybody else who's using cell phones now for everyday business, how will this impact them? I mean, I don't see how we could do anything with this bill without knowing how it's going to not just affect everyday living, but how it's going to do with commerce. Are we asking people to go back to radios? Can they even go back with the technology? I mean, do you want a CB radio coming back up, or, you know, what do you need? But the ride-along I did with a police officer, he answered it, and most of them were very important things that he needed to get to from headquarters. You know, now that's going to be taken away from them, not just us. So I'm wondering whether or not it even needs to go forward.
I'm sorry. Would you clarify that? What did he answer with?
The cell phone.
Okay.
His hands. It was in his pocket. And he.
So it wasn't a radio from the car, but it was.
He had a radio from the car for his regular, where he was going to go next. And if they needed him because of something else going on that was, I guess they didn't want maybe people to hear over the waves. I could be speculating on that one. Is that he used the cell phone. He didn't use it for very long, but he did use it on numerous occasions. And I'm just wondering on that aspect, what would happen if this is done? I just don't know. I think there's so many things we just don't know they're being used for, and what's the alternative?
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just think there. If we started listing exclusions for groups like peace officers, et cetera, we would run into pages and pages, because there are just so many businesses nowadays that, I mean, their dispatchers aren't using CB radios or anything anymore. They've all gone to cell phones. And so,
Chair, I'm sorry, I have a point of order. We have an amendment on the table dealing exclusively with hands-free device, and if we could dispatch of that before we debate the bill. We've had two debates in a row on the bill.
You're right. Sorry.
And I apologize. Thank you.
Sorry.
And on to keep it to the amendment. I've got three hands here. Representative G.T. Wilson.
I guess my question is, what would be the statistics? How would it change statistically going from one to the other? My understanding was the testimony we had last time said that it didn't make any difference. I could think it was from Representative Dugan that they both caused accidents. So would we be able to get more data on that amendment to find out whether it's safe or not?
Representative Peterson.
That was that question directed to me?
No, you had your hand raised.
Oh, no, I'm
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The members might want to look at the several research papers that have been prepared. We've got a lot of stuff here, and it may be that people need to look at this, but we have three things from Cindy Cashin. We have her testimony, the documentation that's in the bill packet. It's 1-2010. We have a second email that came out that attaches the Virginia study. We have a third thing that came out that deals with commercial trucker distracted driving.
Now, is this to do with the amendment?
I'm sorry. Okay. Let me be specific to the amendment. If the members would look at I have two legislative research things here. We have, and they both relate to the amendment, Madam Chair. The first is dated February 18, and it's on legislative research letterhead. And it says, seven states and the District of Columbia already impose statewide bans on driving while talking on handheld cell phones. And these states are listed in footnote 2, California, Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, Utah, Washington, and also the District of Columbia. And the exact language of these statutes, which was given to us at my request, is in the memo, follow-up memo, from Tim Spangler of Legislative Research, dated February 22. And there is testimony in addition that's cited here in the first research paper that Arthur Goodwin, senior research associate at the Highway Safety Research Center, contends that laws banning or limiting cell phone use while operating a motor vehicle are of vital importance and are gaining momentum statewide. We can see that from the cover sheet on the February 18 research memo that 17 other states prohibit the use of cell phones operating while operating a school bus.
Representative Gruenberg?
Yeah.
Does this have to do with hands-free?
Well, what I'm saying is talking about, there was question, I think, by Representative T. Wilson about whether other states are doing this sort of thing, and I'm putting this
and but we're on the amendment now, and it's talking about hands-free. Does none of that, I believe, was hands-free?
No, the seven states were. Take a look at the front, at the very first bullet there.
No,
seven states impose statewide bans on driving while talking on handheld cell
phones. That's not hands-free.
Handheld is not hands-free.
Hands-free is no hands.
No, this will prohibit hands held, but will permit hands free.
Yes.
And as I read this, the seven states allow headsets.
No, it says.
It says handheld.
Handheld cell phones. That's what just a normal cell phone.
Yeah, and this says you can't do it handheld, but you can do it with its hands free. And as I read that, Madam Chair, these seven states are like this amendment.
No.
You don't read it that way.
No.
Well, let's take a look.
No, the seven states are hands-free. That is right.
Yeah.
The seven,
yes.
That would make it the seven states.
That's
right.
Absolutely correct.
I'm going to set it like I do.
I believe that's correct.
I think all states.
Yeah, the seven states is handheld only, and this amendment would make it like the seven states.
It's right on point, Madam Chair.
Well, it doesn't say that.
Sure, I think
okay, if you take a look, for example, I'm looking at the Connecticut statute, which is in the second packet. It's Connecticut chapter 14-296AA, subsection A3. Handheld mobile telephone means a mobile telephone with which a user engages in a call using at least one hand. And it bans them. And it does exactly what Amendment 1 does. So we have seven states that do what Amendment 1 does, plus the District of Columbia. Yes. Ms. Cashin is nodding yes.
No, none of that says that.
Maybe we could have Ms. Cashin come up and verify that, because I'm quite sure that's the case.
Can I just make a point?
Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Representative Grimberg. The data that is provided speaks to the seven states that have a ban on handheld. In all of those states, hands-free are allowed, but it doesn't state it in the memo. And I think that was provided by earlier testimony.
Yeah. So. With due respect, I just want the record to be correct.
That's not one of my favorite states.
Madam Chair, we're not, what I was trying to get at is that seven states and the District of Columbia already do what Amendment 1 says. We're not doing anything that's really out there at the cutting edge. And there's a very definite trend, and these other states are listed here, and they're going, at least to some extent, to ban the use of cell phones. The 19 states at the last one is text messaging, which we already have because of the bill we passed a couple of years ago. But we have a second group that ban the use of any cell phones while operating a school bus. The third group is 21 states that prohibit novice drivers, usually under the age of 18, from using cell phones while operating a vehicle. And so what we're doing here, Madam Chair, is we are taking a step. Seven states have done it already, and these other states, some of them apply to school bus drivers, some of them apply to young drivers, but they're doing something.
Any other questions?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to continue to hold your objection?
I'll remove the objection.
I won't.
Okay, Representative Johnson has and still retains his objection. So I guess we will need to call the roll. And that's for Amendment 1, which says that hands-free can be used. It says it says in this section, hands-free mode means use of a cellular telephone for listening or talking by means of a speaker function, headset, or earpiece without holding the telephone. So, would you call the roll?
Representative Johansson?
Yes.
Representative Munoz?
Yes.
Representative Grunberg?
Yes.
Representative Peterson?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative
Wilson?
Yes.
Pete Wilson.
Oh.
No.
Chair Wilson?
Yes.
5 days, 2 days.
Okay, the amendment has passed. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Becky, do you have that statute to hand out, please? I'm going to offer this printed one, then we'll get to the other one that Becky's handing out now. I'll have two. Madam Chair, I would like to offer as amendment number 2, lockup E.2.
Would you like to move that amendment?
I'd like to move it, please.
Okay.
Object.
Okay, we have Amendment 2 before us, and there has been an objection, and that is to delete the effective date, and that just makes it so that all we have to do for the bill to pass is have a simple majority.
Yes, Madam Chair, if I could maybe explain. I'm sorry? Oh, yeah, okay. Normally, it takes 21 votes to pass. But if there's any kind of an effective date clause, like Section 2, that for that to be effective, it takes a supermajority of 27. And this will simply, generally, my policy is, unless there's a good reason for an effective date, and I've talked informally with the sponsor, I haven't heard any super good reason for this, I like to keep bills simple and not require the 27 votes. And it wouldn't affect the rest of the bill. It's just the effective date. And that's why I'm offering this. I do this not infrequently.
Okay. Representative Johansson.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Gruenberg could continue his discussion about the effective date. It does not effectively require 27 votes or the bill doesn't pass. It
no.
simply takes, what is it, 90 days mm-hmm. for the effective date to actually, mm-hmm. for the bill to actually become law. Mm-hmm. So it's a higher threshold for a specific effective date. It has no bearing whatsoever on the substance of the bill, except for the timing.
And Madam Chair, if I may follow up, the effective date's actually wrong, and it'd have to be amended anyway, because, well, no, I'm sorry, it wouldn't have to be amended. I know it was offered. No, it would be okay. I strike what I've said. I have nothing further to say.
I doubt that.
Okay. Do you still retain your objection?
Sure.
Okay. Then we will have to call the roll. Madam Secretary, can you call the roll?
Madam Chair, could I have the amendment reread so that I understand?
Okay.
Don't you have it?
Here it is. The amendment, all the amendment does is delete section, I thought it deleted section 3, but it doesn't. Just delete and providing for an effective date.
Representative Munoz?
Yes.
Representative Gruenberg?
Yes.
Representative Peterson?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative T. Wilson? No. Chair Wilson? Yes.
Representative Johansson?
No.
4 yeas, 3 nays.
Okay, the amendment has passed. We have another amendment, number 3. Representative Gruenberg.
Amendment number 3 is a conceptual amendment, Madam Chair.
Conceptual amendment.
And if the members would look at the statute that was passed out, it's AS 422150(1), defining emergency. And Representative Johnson questioned how emergency would be defined. The word emergency appears on line 9 of the bill, and it would be the conceptual amendment would be something like, as used in this section, emergency is defined as it is defined in AS 422150(1), just so there's no question as to the type of emergency. And I would hope that this could be adopted without objection.
Oh, he said 501.
Did I misstate the number?
150?
Yeah.
Okay, you said 501.
Oh, jeez. Okay, it's 422150(1).
Okay.
And I hope Nancy got that right. Yeah. Sorry, so thanks for catching.
So the number is 422150.
Yes. Sub 1.
Sub 1.
And that's conceptual. The bill drafter will do as he or she wishes.
All right. So we have a conceptual amendment number 3 that defines emergency. Was there an objection to that? Hearing no objection, conceptual amendment number 3 has passed. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Peterson.
I'd like to offer amendment number four.
Amendment number four.
Sure.
Do you want to move that amendment?
I move amendment number four, Madam Chair.
Okay. Amendment number four has been objected to. So, Mr. Representative Peterson, do you want to explain your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This would, instead of making it a primary offense, which means a peace officer could stop you specifically if he saw you using a cell phone, this would mean that they would have to be stopping you for a different violation. And in other words, if they saw you driving erratically down the road because you were trying to dial someone on your cell phone, then they could pull you over for that. But if they just saw you talking on your cell phone and driving down the road without, you know, causing, you know, any danger to anyone else, and they couldn't pull you over for that. So it's what they call a secondary offense. And in the information that was passed out to us, several of the states who currently have this law have set it up as a secondary offense, and the reason for that is because the number of law enforcement officers is limited, and they have a lot on their plate already, they could still write someone up for it, but they just couldn't pull them over for the only law that they were breaking was using the cell phone.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Could I ask,
did you object?
I did object.
Okay.
Is Lieutenant Dial still on the phone?
Lieutenant Dial, are you still here?
Madam Chair, I am online.
Okay, thank you. We have a question.
Thank you, Lieutenant Dial. Is distracted driving a primary offense? If you saw someone who was distracted, could you pull them over?
Through the chair, I actually considered this a little bit before this committee, and there are several potential citations that we could use to address this. For example, reckless or negligent driving. Obviously, it depends on the circumstances. And then there are some statutes that we could use if the actual use caused some sort of accident.
Okay, follow-up, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Lieutenant. If you saw someone who was, I'm going to get in trouble for this, putting their makeup on and driving a little bit reckless, could you pull them over?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, yes, I could. I would probably do that under the negligent driving statute.
And is reckless a relative term or subjective term? Or is it defined?
The chair, by statute, reckless is obviously a more serious charge than negligent. If I may here, to drive recklessly, you would have to create a substantial and unjustifiable risk of harm to persons or property. And I think negligent is more of a unjustifiable risk of harm to persons or property. And as a result of that risk, they actually endanger somebody. So somebody putting on makeup, swerving into the oncoming lane, that would be appropriately a negligent driving case.
What if they didn't swerve?
Follow up.
Sorry, Madam Chair. And if they didn't swerve, could you just assume that they were distracted and pull them over?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, if there was nothing else, I probably wouldn't pull them over. You know, it's very common for us to see all kinds of distracted driving going down the road, but unless that distracted driving actually causes something that endangers that we can justifiably say is endangering somebody or something, normally we wouldn't pull them over for that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Could you please explain some of that distracted behavior so that I can prepare another amendment? Never mind, Mr. That was, I apologize, Madam Chairman. Thank you, Lieutenant.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Johansson?
No, I'm ready to vote.
No question? What's the wishes of the committee?
Madam Chair?
Any other amendments?
Madam Chair?
We have an amendment.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. This is the amendment.
Maybe I'm wrong. Did I hear in it? I don't know.
Yeah,
if I heard.
There, Representative Johnson had an objection.
I'll remove my objection on this amendment. This one is the only one that makes sense.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative T. Wilson.
I just have a question. There was no fiscal note to this. Is that correct? To this bill?
Right.
And I'm trying to figure out why. Because right now, I believe most, and maybe DOT or somebody can answer that, that most state vehicles and police and everybody use cell phones now to communicate. Would there not have to be radios installed instead? Or some other kind of communication? So I can't imagine that this bill would not have an impact financially to the state if cell phones were not able to be used in vehicles any longer. Because everybody's not going to pull over. They're going to have communication like they currently do. What would be the alternative?
DOT is coming to the...
I thought that was removed.
The objection was removed.
It's still on the table.
Oh, sorry. I thought once it was removed, it wasn't. Sorry.
No, we passed the amendment.
Well, we
did. Did we?
Yeah. He removed his objection.
No, we didn't. Oh, that's right. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was passed without objection.
Did we have a...
As soon as I say it, it is.
But I didn't say it yet.
Sorry.
that little slight detail has to happen.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So there's no other objections to that amendment. Okay. So amendment number 4 does pass. And then, now you had a question, Representative T. Wilson.
Madam.
Representative Johansson.
Maybe it's not the right place. I may not be.
I'm just trying to get through the amendment process before we have bill discussion.
Do we have another amendment?
I have a motion.
Do you have an amendment?
It's an emotion. It is a motion that is in order. It's not to move the bill. It's a motion that's in order.
Okay.
I move that we rescind our action in failing to adopt amendment number 2.
We adopted it 4-3.
And I'm making a motion to rescind that action.
That's the one about the effective date.
I'll remove my motion. That's okay.
Madam Chair, I'd like to point out something, that the effect of amendment number 2 was to delay the effective date of this. If you don't pass that amendment, the bill become effective probably earlier. It's unlikely that the governor will sign this by March the 1st. And if he signs it any later than March the 1st, then July 1st will occur before the normal effective date. So what I've done is delay the effective date by removing it. And if you want to make it effective earlier, it's okay with me. But I just point out it's not just simpler, but it actually delays the effective date by a few months. It's a reverse.
Representative Johansson.
I'll remove my motion.
Okay. The objection, or the amendment, what did you, it wasn't amendment, was it?
I just took my motion off the table, so we're okay. Right.
He withdrew it after I told him what the effect was.
Okay. All right, now.
I may offer it again. If I
any other comments? Representative T. Wilson.
Madam Chair, if it's appropriate now,
no.
Which I'm not sure. Okay, let me know when.
I just want to make sure because this has got so much controversy on it.
Madam.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
I have a motion. I would move that we table this bill until we get information that we need from the other parties that testified today so that we have all the information in front of us
before we make a decision that what I feel is going to once again impose a egregious burden on Alaskan citizens. So I'd like to see all the information. I would hate for it to pass out of this committee or not. I'm not sure it's got the votes to pass out of this committee, but I'd like to see it tabled until we can get the information which was provided, and I'm drawing a blank on the name. Dr. Priestley, I'd like to see that information. I'd like to verify that. That causes me great concerns for us to continue with this bill with that kind of testimony out there as being unsubstantiated.
I'll object for discussion.
You object. Representative Johansson objects for discussion.
I'll object to the motion to table. I would rather leave it up to the chair's discretion to hold the bill.
And
I withdraw that motion then, Madam Chair.
Okay. And I actually think that that's a wise decision at this time. We've got too many questions, too much back and forth in the committee for me to feel comfortable of moving out the bill today. So I think we will hold it till we get more information, and then we will see what happens. Representative Grunberg.
Madam Chair, I think that it's up to your discretion, and I'm sort of appealing to your discretion, that we have people providing information, some of whom oppose the bill. I would hope that you would announce when we'll put it back on the calendar so they know when they need to provide the information. Otherwise, this thing could be delayed and therefore killed.
Well, and I can't tell you that because I don't know when we're going to get the information that we requested to have so that we can make sure we have the facts. So you have the information that Dr. Wichmadoodle had? Okay. Then come forward, Sandy.
Through, Representative Wilson, this is Cindy Cashin for the Alaska Highway Safety Office. I can go back to my office and provide you with both studies, the AAA study and the Insurance Highway Institute study. The reason my office did not use them is because the Institute of Insurance study raises many questions with the Governor's Highway Safety Association of States and NHTSA, the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, because the type of data that was used is the data that depends on people who have been involved in car crashes independently filing their insurance claims. And that type of data fluctuates for many reasons. We look at traffic crash data. We look at the hard data, the results of the different types of crashes and why they happen. We don't look at economic reasons and other factors that taken into consideration. There's one other thing I wanted to mention, and that is previously, about 10 years ago, there was a change in the requirement for police to report on all traffic crashes. Law enforcement agencies are no longer required to report on a traffic crash, which is why if any of you have ever been in a traffic crash in the last, I believe it's 10 years, Lieutenant Dial could probably give you the specific year, you're not required to wait for a law enforcement officer to arrive. You are... we depend on you. The DOT depends on the person involved in the crash to fill out the crash report. It has been a big concern, a major concern of our traffic engineers as we watch the number of traffic crash forms go down. We're receiving each year less and less, and there's really nothing we can do as long as it's a responsibility of the driver involved in the crash. That also plays a big part of the type of data we collect involved, and that includes cell phone usage.
Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. I am going to stick with my decision, and did you want to say anything? Representative Johansson?
I did have a comment. I don't want to slow you down, but I would like to see the information rather than have DOT decide what information should be in front of the committee. I'd like to be able to look at it, so I appreciate that. And my question to Ms. Cashin, is that correct? Is if it's a problem with the Highway Safety Office and with DOT, and I've heard it a couple times and I've kind of bit my tongue, but if there's a problem with gathering the information and it's because there's a statute, then why isn't the department, or have you been talking to the executive branch to introduce a piece of legislation?
Well, you know what I'm thinking is that if they're getting the data from self-written reports of accidents, what do you think's gonna, what's gonna be on them when they're writing something that they're gonna help, hope their insurance company makes sure that they're the right one and they aren't gonna get blamed and all that. So it's gonna be slanted, I think. Is that what you're saying, Cindy?
Well, it's only through the Representative Wilson, that's just speculation, but we are seeing the number of crash forms go down significantly each year, and we are not seeing cell phone usage as a major factor in those crashes for several reasons, and that could be one of them.
Could I clarify, please?
Representative Johansson.
Maybe I missed it, but what I got out of what you were saying was the reason you're not getting the information is because there was some sort of a statutory change 10 years ago that didn't require that information. So is there a statutory proposal that could be put forward by your office through the governor's office, through the rules committee, that would help you make better decisions and gather more information? That's my question.
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, that is not an area that is of my office's responsibility or concern. What we're concerned with is what goes on the traffic crash forms.
Wait a minute now. Are you finished?
I just want to, there's no forms that are required unless the law requires it and rewrite the law. So somebody made that form, and it must have been us. And if there's a problem, what I'm saying is tell us what the problem is. Have the governor introduce a bill through the Rules Committee and let's discuss it. If there's a problem, I'd be happy to discuss it and try and help you.
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, the problem is when you make one small change on that form, you affect every agency involved with traffic crashes, including the court system, whether their program, their computer program, can accept that information or not. So it's like millions of dollars to change it because all the agencies involved have to have their program, their software program, accept that change. We're going to electronic citation data. And we're looking at including, of course, cell phone and other types of distraction involved in that those electric forms. But we're moving slowly because we have to make sure that every single one of our agencies, from law enforcement to DOT to the court system to DMV, can accept that because we all have different types of software systems. It's very complicated, and I apologize. I wish I could say, yes, we'd appreciate it, but we have been working on it, and we'll continue to.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I'm not clear. Is this form not required any longer?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, that is just one page of the report. I believe there's a total of four parts. That's just the driver page, the second page. And I believe Lieutenant Dial would be the one to answer that, but it's not the responsibility of Department of Public Safety to fill out the crash forms anymore, and that's the crash form.
So, Lieutenant Dial, are you still online?
Yes, Madam Chair, I am, and I can comment on that if you like.
Would you please?
Yes, actually, Section 080 actually talks about that. Essentially, the driver of a vehicle involved in an accident that results in bodily injury, death, or damage to an extent of $2,000 or more is required to provide notice of that accident to the local police department. So we do accident report forms in those cases. Now, if the accident happened sometime in the past, if the accident is of a lesser value, And the individual is given what's called a participant accident form, and they fill that form out themselves and then send it in. So that's kind of how those accidents are dealt with right now.
So I would imagine that policy was policy call was made because you guys can't be everywhere at once, and there's many times when nobody was hurt. Sometimes somebody will say, I'll pay you for what it costs so that my insurance doesn't go up or something like that. And so no report was made at all?
Madam Chair, to my knowledge, the only thing that's really changed over the years is the actual dollar amount involved. I remember back when I started, it was set at a much lower amount, like $500. I think part of the reason for that change is, you know, if somebody opens their car door into your door in a parking lot, you know, that could quickly be $500. So there's been some reasons for that change. My understanding has always been that it to kind of help reduce the number of reports that are processed by the local police departments to the more serious ones, and the very minor ones like a door ding, you know, can be handled by the individual and their insurance companies.
I have one more question.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I opened up a door and knocked somebody's rearview mirror off, and it was over $600 because it was electrically heated or something. Anyway, Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Lieutenant Dial, I have in front of me a form, Alaska Motor Vehicle Collision Report. It's got a DMV number, incident case, and it's Part B. Is this the self-reporting form, or is this the form that's filled out by the police department in those more serious accidents?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I believe that is the form that all police departments in the state use for the more serious accidents. It's not the citizen report form.
And it has a box for cell phone use that's filled out for all serious accidents?
Through the chair, that is correct.
So we, Madam Chair, if I might, so we are collecting the data on serious accidents and money more than 500 or whatever the number is?
2,000.
2,000. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I'm sorry, we're going to have to adjourn because there's another committee coming in.
Before we meet again, can we have this all melded into a CS?
I will make a decision and let you know. Okay, this meeting is adjourned.